on all of our meetings, the declaration on the back of the periodical is either expressed or actually read. Why? Because the basis of how we operate is critical to the ability to be able to give out these ancient teachings. It is an association of students, not an organization of any kind, which means there are no officers, there's no bylaws, there's no constitution. The only thing that an individual must adhere to is the fact of universal brotherhood. That's it. And because it is an association, you can't be a member of it. It's not possible. You can be an associate of it. You associate with it because you agree with its purpose, its cause, which is to give out the teachings of theosophy as they were found in the original writings of theosophy. That doesn't mean that individuals can't read other things. It just means we get a foundation of the original. And from there, we are free to decide whether something is in coherence with that, in agreement with that, and we follow the logic of the original writings. Equally, from the platform, it is the writings, the teachings that are given out, not individual opinions or what the person thinks they know. It is what the philosophy teaches. The individual associate supports the lodge and by attendance at meetings and work of any kind that is needed, and of course by donations, because the work is carried on strictly by donations. There's no fees or dues of any kind. As is often said, if we would charge, we could do much, much better. But we cannot charge, because this wisdom belongs to every soul, everyone. We cannot charge for it. So the books that you find at the book table, what you're paying for is the actual physical process of typesetting of the book, and then the paying for the paper and the hard covers and the printing and the shipping to get it to us. You are only paying for the physical part of it. The ideas are yours already, your heritage. So you will find that The Secret Doctrine, which is two volumes, costs $25. That's, in today's world, just a little ridiculous, but we hope we can hold to that price even longer. As we just discovered, when things get reprinted because they run out of them, the price goes up substantially. So if you want books, get them as soon as you can before the price goes up again. Now, we meet here twice weekly, this Sunday morning meeting. And the month of December, we're looking at cycles and cyclic law. This morning, it's dreams and visions of the night. And next Sunday, the journey through life and death. A journey we're all on. On Wednesdays, we have a reference library open from 5:15 to 7:15, and then a study class in the Key to Theosophy from 7:30 to 8:30. We are moving through the entire book, and it's a deep and wonderful study. The work is done solely on a voluntary basis, and everyone is invited to participate, and everyone is welcome. Now, this morning, we will have a short talk on dreams and visions of the night, and then your questions will be invited.
Good morning. In Dickens' celebrated Christmas story, A Christmas Carol, the story's hero, Ebenezer Scrooge, says following his first encounter with his deceased partner's ghost that the occurrence was caused by a bit of undigested potato. Some say cheese or beef. Yeah. Pick it. Potato. Your choice. The famous story was published in 1843. And here today we stand with large segments of our modern society still unaware of the significance of sleep, dreams, dreaming, and dreamers as those in 1843. Sleep and dreaming are common to us all. They are part and parcel of our life. Yet most religions and philosophies ignore or touch lightly upon the subject. Science does address it, but is kept from a comprehensive understanding and appreciation because of the omission of the multifaceted makeup of man. So we look at this and we think theosophy is best suited to delve behind the mundane and uncover the mysteries that are found there. The ancient wisdom teachings inform us that we can only understand the nature and function of real dreams by first recognizing the existence of an immortal ego in mortal man that is independent of physical body. And that during sleep, when the physical body is dormant and incapable of thinking, this immortal ego experiences life on a plane of on its own plane of existence. What we see as dreams are in reality small remnants from the life and experience of the inner man, and the dim recollection of which at the moment of awakening becomes more or less distorted by our physical memory. The ancient wisdom known as theosophy goes further, stating that in fact there are three states of consciousness and that advanced souls are aware and awake in each simultaneously. The three states are waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. Those of us who can be considered ordinary are aware only of our waking state. The waking state, which is rendered as jagrata in Sanskrit, is the state in which we must come to full consciousness of the self within. In no other state is salvation possible. Our dream state, which is translated in Sanskrit as swapna, is affected by our waking state, causing dreams and suggestions that either disturb the instructions that come down from the higher state or aids the person through the waking calmness and concentration, which tend to lessen the distortions of the mental experience of dream life. The dream state, or swapna, acts on the waking state through suggestions made to the dreamer in dreams. An unholy state of our waking hours makes us vulnerable to evil influences, just as a cleansed and purposeful mind makes us susceptible to higher inclinations. The experience is common and mentioned prominently in all religions. In the fabled Garden of Eden, the wily serpent whispered in the ear of the sleeping mortal to the end that when awake, he should violate the commands of his God. In Job, it is said that God instructeth man in sleep and dreams and in visions of the night. We now come to sushupti, or dreamless sleep, the third state. Though it is translated as dreamless sleep, that description isn't adequate. Dreamless though it is, It is also a state in which even criminals commune through their higher natures with the spiritual beings and enter into the spiritual plane. It is the great spiritual reservoir by means of which the tremendous momentum toward evil living is held in check. To better understand this, we must study the details of the sleep process. After we fall asleep and begin to dream, we then enter sushupti, that dreamless state of consciousness. Our outer senses become relaxed and the brain begins to throw up images, the reproductions of waking acts and thoughts. We then enter a plane of experience which is as real as our waking state, but of a different sort. This region is divided from the waking life below and the sushupti above. In this region, we wander until we begin to rise into the higher plane of sushupti. There, no disturbances come from the brain action, and the being is a partaker, to the extent that his nature permits, of the banquet of the gods. When it's time to return to the waking state, the only route available to the sushupti tourist is the path that brought him there. As sushupti extends in every direction, and swapna under it also in every direction, there is no possibility of emerging at once from the dreamless state into the waking state. The transition from one state to another is like going through a metaphysical customs procedure. The beautiful and wonderful experiences of the inner man cannot be brought back as they were experienced. What is allowed to return to our waking state is confused bits and pieces, like pages torn from a stranger's journal or diary. With that information, we can see now that our assignment is clear. We should set about the task of strengthening and vivifying of the dreaming state, which will result in removing the confusion and distortion existing there, in order that upon emerging into the waking life, we may retain a wider and brighter memory of what occurred in sushupti. We can accomplish this by an increased concentration upon high thoughts, upon noble goals and purposes, upon all that is best and most spiritual in us while awake, so that we plant the seeds of the habits that will bring these desired changes about. This isn't a short task. It can take lifetimes. And the object is to set up a center of attraction in this waking state. With this center as our focus, the rays from the whole waking man towards Swapna will carry him into the dream state with greater clarity. By reaction, this creates another focus in the dream state through which he can emerge into the dreamless sleep in a collected condition. Returning, he goes by means of these points through the dream state, and there, the confusion being lessened, he enters into his usual waking state, the possessor, to some extent at least, of the benefits and knowledge of sushupti, or the dreamless sleep. The difference between the man who is not concentrated and the one who is consists of this, that the first passes from one state to the other just as sand does through a sieve, while a concentrated man passes from one to the other like the rays of the sun through a lens. In the first case, each stream of sand is a different experience, a different set of confused thoughts. Whereas the collected man returns the owner of a regular and clear experience. Now this subject is vast and great and of great importance. And students of theosophy are urged to purify, elevate, and concentrate the thoughts and acts of their waking hours, so that they shall not continually and aimlessly, night after night, day after day, go into and return from these natural and wisely appointed states, no wiser and no better able to help their fellow man. In a wonderland they lie, dreaming as the days go by, dreaming as the summers die, ever drifting down a stream, lingering in the golden gleam. Life, what is it but a dream? Lewis Carroll.
Paracelsus is said to have said this: we should not leave the room after rising from our bed. We should speak to nobody, but remain alone and undisturbed, and eat nothing until after a while we may remember our dream. You know, we say, I slept. No, we didn't. We never sleep. We change states of consciousness. Life never sleeps. Just as we never die, and life never dies. It changes the forms, the plane, the state of consciousness. So we don't sleep. We move from this plane, and we don't even register when it happens. If you try to register when you fall asleep, you won't fall asleep. Well, but then you don't fall asleep anyway. Forget I said that. When we enter into that astral plane of what we call dreaming, it is a moment where the astral brain is calling forth some of it nonsense, and we don't think anybody can change Dickens' words. It is a potato, not cheese. Read the Christmas Carol yourself. It could be that we ate something bad, or we're wrapped up in our covers. Something is irritating us as a physical being, and we register this on that withdrawal plane. The dreams can also, on that plane, be things that we're concerned about. But we pass the first time that we go to sleep at night. We have no other way to say it. We don't go to sleep, but the first time we go to sleep, we enter very quickly into the deep sleep state. It's as though we're starving for it, and we rush towards it. It is our best deep sleep experience. It's the longest and the deepest. On that plane, we are one with every soul, the highest beings we can imagine, the person that we may feel is our enemy and out to hurt us. We are one, and we know that oneness. We lay aside all personal things, and we're wrapped up in our own divinity. That's perhaps one of our problems, that we think we have to reach out and have someone else give us divinity. But that's our nature. So perhaps we need to change our terminology. A dream is something that happens on the way to deep sleep, but the experiences in deep sleep are true visions, and we bring them back, as was well stated, through that dreaming state, and we distort them. We lose the value of them. Here we are, with all the wealth of the universe of wisdom, we bring it through nightly, and we don't have it when we wake up. So, we're sure you have questions, but we hope you have questions about examples, because we have some wonderful examples of what dreams have done. Yes?
So, is there a difference then between a vision and a dream?
Is there a difference between a vision and a dream? Absolutely. I mean, you cannot say the dream that I have because I ate something bad and it's disturbing me is the same as the experience I have in deep sleep. And we know if it's a vision. It's different. Some people only wake up with the feeling of deep sleep registered, a feeling of peace, of hope, of being at one. It may not last long enough because we don't listen to Paracelsus. We just get right up and get into our day. But some people wake knowing they've had a significant dream, a dream that they're going to carry with them forever. Yes.
The part that you were saying of Paracelsus and his instructions, is that relevant to the custom of not disturbing a person who's deceased for at least 12 hours?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the person who has just died, the request of letting the soul have 12 hours of peace and quiet without mourners or any kind of disturbance is because they're very busy. They are working very, very hard, taking in all of the experiences and memories of the life just lived. The soul retains that and uses that in the after-death states. So that's the soul busy at something. Paracelsus's recommendation is don't get in your own way by doing other things. Try to collect. It's a similar effort of the soul, but we don't think there's a comparison between the two, but the effort, the purpose is the same. Yes?
Often something will happen in the daytime and it triggers a memory to something that I dreamt about.
Isn't that wonderful?
I dreamt that.
Yes.
And it's not deja vu, because that's something different. This is deja.
But deja vu means already seen. It's exactly what it means. Deja vu can be that you, in the sleep state, experienced ahead of time. You know, one of the things about ourselves as spiritual beings is before birth, we stood in our own highest and saw an outline of the entire life that was coming. Not all the particulars, but the major things. And because we are that powerful, we said, yes, of course. I created those causes. I will return. And I will take care of them. Yes. So we bravely come forward. But we have that power while we're here as well. It's just it's so busy on this plane, we don't hear ourselves. So when we dream something like that, it's because we have lived out that coming day or that coming week or that coming month. We may know many, many things.
Well, we attribute deja vu as to something significant, whereas if it's just some little thing that triggers some, no, it's
no.
The same.
No, you can have a dream of a person in a red suit saying strange things. That's not significant,
is
it? It could be Santa Claus, which is funny. Santa Claus is the only Christian thing about Christmas because he was a Christian bishop. But the fact is that it's a proof. Even if the thing is insignificant, it's a proof that we registered it before. Anyone who has experienced deja vu, you could never tell them, no, you don't know what you're talking about, because you know. And if you could do it, you could say what the person is going to say next or do. It's just you're so stunned, you're not going to do it. But you know you could. Yes?
In the talk, concentration was mentioned as being something we should
develop. Yes.
And we have just realized that is what leads to the vision. Because if we set it up in our mind, we've been working on solving something, or
right.
We have a question about something, and we're really concentrated on it, we can get that answer
yes.
In the deep
in the deep sleep, but then we have to bring it back through dreams. I'm so glad you brought that up. We have some wonderful examples, things that we never realized. This one we're calling creativity in science. Well, paper. I did not glue them together. Oh, okay. Dmitri Mendeleev. It said that he was on a 3-day work bender when he finally gave in for a few minutes of shut-eye. Instead of falling asleep for 17 hours like most sleep-deprived people, he dreamt of an arrangement of elements that would change modern chemistry forever, then popped up about 20 minutes later to record it. I saw in a dream a table where all the elements fell into place as required. Awakening, I immediately wrote it down on a piece of paper. Only in one place did a correction later seem necessary. And we all know that to this day as the periodic table. Actually, in a Life magazine article in the 40s, Life magazine came very close to making a theosophical statement. It showed the period of the elements, and they did it in color, showing that they were octaves and that the progression was an intelligent one. And at the end, the editors stated, "This shows the intelligence that underlies the universe." And then another one that we're all familiar with, Dr. James Watson. The shape and structure of DNA eluded scientists until 1953, when Dr. Watson had a dream that made him consider the double helix. According to his alma mater, Indiana University, the dream was of two intertwined serpents with heads at opposite ends, though other accounts say the dream was of a double-sided staircase. One more, if I may, because these just excite me so much. Don't they please you to know that people have this experience? Madam C.J. Walker, the first female American self-made millionaire. She was also the first member of her family born free. The child of slaves, she founded and built a highly successful African-American cosmetic company that made her a millionaire many times over. She was suffering from a scalp infection that caused her to lose most of her hair in the 1890s. She began experimenting with patented medicines and hair care products. Quote, "One night I had a dream. And in that dream, a big black man appeared to me and told me what to mix up in my hair. Some of the remedy was grown in Africa, but I sent for it, mixed it, put it on my scalp, and in a few weeks, my hair was coming in faster than it had ever fallen out. I tried it on my friends. I helped them. I made up my mind to begin to sell it." End quote. Madam Walker was an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, and a social activist. There you have three amazing things from dreams. But that's a millionaire, the periodic table, the DNA, and we have one on the Nobel Prize. A dream made the individual win the Nobel Prize. Otto Leowi, a German-born physiologist, won the Nobel Prize for Medicine in 1936 for his work on the chemical transmission of nerve impulses. He awoke from a dream, turned on a light, and jotted down a few notes on a tiny slip of paper. Quote, "It occurred to me at 6 o'clock in the morning that during the night I had written down something most important, but I was unable to decipher the scrawl. The next night at 3 o'clock, the idea returned. It was the design of an experiment. And ultimately, the result of that dream became the foundation for the theory of the chemical transmission of nerve impulses. And he won the Nobel Prize for it. What's wrong with us? These people did it. We could do it. Yes.
Well, there's many inventors,
yes,
that have stated they got the ideas while during the night,
right,
in a dream.
Right.
So there are many of them that have come in, and also in the field of medicine.
Mm-hmm. And mathematics. And we have art as well. You know, the one thing that is successfully truly helping people who have diabetes type 1 is insulin. It came in a dream. Dr. Banting dreamt of the solution and wrote it down, thus discovering insulin. So yeah, amazing things have come from dreams. We should write our dreams down. Yes.
So how is it that two people or more could dream the same, let's say there's a question on their mind, mm-hmm, a scientific or mathematic question, we're thinking of Tesla and we forget who else, maybe Einstein, how is it that they can have the same vision at the same time?
Where do we think ideas come from? Yes.
Universal mind.
Universal mind. We are taught that we are universal mind beings, all connected to the same... I used to love words.
Network.
Yeah, well, we're all part of one universal mind. Our ability to tap into that depends on our use of our mind and brain on this plane. The mind is, what's the expression? If you have a vase of a certain shape, if you pour something into that, what you pour into it takes on that shape. Our mind has a certain shape by our use of it. Two people will have and show up at the patent office at the same time with the very same invention, because they saw it in universal mind. Yes.
Well, it's no accident that most of these people getting these ideas in their dreams are trained scientists, mm-hmm, because we could get the same idea and not know what to do with
right.
it.
Right. They're paying attention and they're seeking answers. Now, we could do that in our personal life. You know, what is my worst problem? Well, I eat too much. I spend too much money. Whatever it is, we could calculatingly decide, I'm going to focus on that. I'm going to find out why I do that. And we will get dreams that help to reveal us. Because in spite of what we think, life wants to aid and assist us. Yes?
We speak quite a bit about scientists and inventors, but it also happens in the art world.
Mm-hmm.
In music, there have been quite a few musicians who were relegated to second best because they played just like another musician.
Right, derivative.
Who had come on
the scene
earlier with the exact same sound and concept of playing. And they not copied him. A lot of time they never heard it. It was inspired in that.
Right.
And that was what they
Hardly
did.
Fair, is it? You know? We happen to know that Nat King Cole's brother sang exactly like he did, but he couldn't go anywhere with it because there was already a Nat King Cole. That's all on, we have amazing things on death as well, dreams and death. Sir Walter Scott would wake up in the morning and find poems he had written during his sleep. Now, Edgar Allan Poe and Robert Louis Stevenson both said the same thing. And we're sure everybody knows that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde was the result of a dream. And Kubla Khan was also the result of a dream, where actual words and phrases Yes.
Well, we've never heard it put forth, but we'll just put it out there.
Well, then it will have been put forth. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, wasn't the author a drug addict as well?
Yes.
So, therefore, that could have been an influence as well.
Well, I'm sure, because anything that alters your state of consciousness. But the problem with that is you can never get to the pure truth because you're trespassing. You're sneaking your way into something that belongs to you in the first place. Yes.
Well, the people that, you know, the examples that were given about, you know, people receiving answers in their dreams, is there something maybe about their receptivity to the higher self?
Oh, absolutely.
But why is it that they are able to receive these promptings and just us regular people that have questions we don't receive?
No, that's the wrong use of a statement. It isn't that they are receiving and we don't. It's that they are receiving and they keep and they know how to use. Now, we spoke before about concentration. A scientist, an artist has a focus on something. Therefore, when they get the inspiration, they know what to do with it. What are we focused on? Maybe our jobs, maybe our family, maybe a problem in our life. We're just focused on this plane. We're not thinking of science and art, which is dealing with abstractions, dealing on another plane. We're dealing with the hard and fast material and sensations of life. If we would begin to concentrate on higher spiritual ideas, take one devotional book, read some of it every night before you go to sleep, you will see that it will change what you recall when you wake up in the morning. But you may not recall anything. Don't be frustrated. Keep doing it anyway. But it isn't that we don't receive. It's that we're not receptive. It's a foreign language. We're told that the deep sleep state, the language is symbolism. And we bring back these symbols into the astral plane, and we define them by what we have there, by how we use our brain and our heart and our mind here on this plane. Way in the back.
But that is not to say that all dreams are equal.
No.
There's an incredible array of possibilities between the conscious waking state and the deep, deep sleep state.
And there's a huge range, I think Mr. Judge mentions it, between two people having the same dream. If one is a servant and one is a king, it means completely different things. So we have to learn about our own symbolism. It doesn't mean we turn to a dream book to define things, but it means that we have to be the dream researcher. We sit down and say, all right, I dreamt of a very large tree. What does a tree mean to me? Was the tree healthy? Was it in bloom? What was the season? We have to ask a million questions. One of the things about doing that kind of focus and concentration, it tells you as a thinker that you want these answers. That's what scientists and artists do. I want to know. If we keep that up, life, which is a beneficent mother to us, will give us those answers. Yes?
In other words, we're learning how to become literary scientists.
Ah, very nice.
So, unless we learn the language of the soul, we wouldn't be able to understand even our own dreams.
Right. We do know that language, though, don't we? We know it, but we don't commune in it. We keep ourselves very busy on this plane. If we would spend time reading books that arouse our intuition, our higher feelings, we would be closer to those symbols. Yes.
What about people people who do not recall any dreams?
Well, just because you don't recall a dream doesn't mean you haven't had one. AHPB points out that animals, insects, dream. Anything with a brain has to have this activity. So the fact that we don't recall dreams can be A, beneficial. There might be some sort of disturbance going on for us on the astral plane. Better that we don't bring it into this consciousness here. It might be karmic. We might have set up a block of some kind. That doesn't mean we'll have the same block in the next life. It can also be because we go to bed either too physically exhausted, absolutely drained of everything, or we're not getting enough good sleep to begin with, which science is lately being very intense about, how important it is to get that good sleep. Or it can be that we don't want to remember. It's in our control, even if it seems indirectly. Yes?
Yeah, it's interesting, too, that right now, especially because there is a, I forgot the word, but when it's prevalent.
It's a virus. Forgetting
it's
words.
Viral. Uh-huh. And one of the things is people trying to get to sleep. We are sleep deprived, especially in the industrial societies. We are a sleep deprived people, and I'm wondering, is that what the effects of that? How can we? I know it costs a lot of money, but that's not doesn't seem like it would be the important thing. You see, plenty of people who have big names, who are celebrities, who have died in search of
a good night's sleep. But what is the result of insufficient or poor sleep? Madness of one kind or another. If we didn't have the deep sleep state or the dreamless state, we as spiritual beings trapped in these bodies that we have made for ourselves, we can't blame anybody else. Nevertheless, we are in prison. If we didn't get to escape nightly, we would go mad. And science is beginning to realize this. They've done studies with sleep deprivation, and they've had to call them off because they were so debilitating to people. Yes?
Follow up. As a matter of fact, on the news this morning, one of the leading stories were people driving, sleep-deprived people driving, and the accidents that they caused.
Right.
The effect of sleeplessness is while driving is just like being intoxicated.
Or texting or something. You cannot focus on the fact that you're driving this powerful instrument. There are, of course, many reasons. If you recall when you were younger, of course, that wouldn't be true for young people, everything was dark at a certain hour. And darkness is a natural cycle. You sleep, and then when the light comes in the morning, that wakes you up. That's the natural cycle. Well, now we have artificial lighting at all times. There's a wonderful place in Colorado called White Cliff where they've signed an agreement. Nobody has any lights on at night, and the place is now overloaded with people with telescopes looking at the Milky Way and such. But we want to finish this, then we'll come back. Not only is there light all around us, there's light inside everywhere. We don't spend much time in dull or dim light. And then we make this terrible habit of perhaps looking at the cell phone just before we go to bed or going on the computer and checking things. That artificial light is more detrimental than normal light. So we're already setting up a cycle to not fall asleep easily. We also take all of our problems to bed with us. Instead of sitting down and reading something that will calm the mind, feed the heart, and taking a deep breath, I will be back tomorrow and I will do better. We need sleep. It isn't laziness. It is the body can't, the physical body cannot handle any more of this power of life. We escape, the body rests. And I'm sure any of you who've ever looked at anything medical, more repairs and things are done within the body while we're sleeping. Yes?
Well, two things. One, that town in
White Cliff?
Yeah. It's not that they don't allow lights at a certain time. They have developed these special lights with these shades on them, like the outside lights, so that...
But they turn them off at a certain hour, too. It's kind of amazing.
But anyway, the second thing I wanted to say, I have a question. When somebody who, as was stated earlier, if you have a dream, you don't remember it, but something sparks it during the day.
Yes.
Is that kind of the same thing that happens with the hypnotic suggestion that occurs like days down the road and that it's not, you know, like...
No, because a hypnotic suggestion is you were not in control as a thinker, as a spiritual being, of your mind, and a seed was planted. And the brain mind will allow that seed to, whatever the constrictions were, bloom. Remembering an event, a dream event, because you're prompted by a smell or a sound or something, whatever it is, it's a memory trigger, which is not the same thing. And it's a wonderful feeling when it happens. And you wish, because think, how many things are there? How many nights have you gone to sleep in this life? And you can't touch those memories. We think it helps to remember that when we die, in that review, that burning of the entire life, every dream is there for us. We have it. Yes?
I heard in, from more than one source, if you want to remember your dreams, you have to put some effort into it.
Yes.
Like, think about it before you go to sleep. And
when you wake up.
You have to stay with it when you wake up and, you know.
Yes.
You have to put some effort into it.
And it is said it's a good idea to have, you know, a little notepad and a pen near your bed, so that you can write down what you can. Yes?
We think it's around page 100 in a book called Transactions of the Blavatsky Lodge that talks about dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 10 particular points.
Seven. Okay. Yeah, we have them.
One of them we find fascinating because it did happen to us once. There is, when it was talked about earlier, that visions are different. They feel different. You know it's something important. There's a dream that we can have, a vision that we can have for another whose mind is busy, and we know it when we awake and must transmit that message to the one that's appropriate.
The seven kinds, briefly. Prophetic dreams impressed on our memory and are generally plain and clear, either a voice heard or the coming event foreseen. Two, allegorical dreams, or hazy glimpses of reality distorted by our fancy, only half true. Three, dreams sent by adepts, good or bad, by mesmerizers, or by the thoughts of very powerful minds bent on making us do their will. All the more reason to be in control of ourselves, not passive. Four, retrospective dreams of events belonging to past incarnations. Five, warning dreams for others who are unable to be impressed. Six, confused dreams the causes of which have been discussed above. 7, dreams which are mere fancies and chaotic pictures owing to digestion, some mental trouble, or such like external cause. Yeah, I think it's on page 99 or something, right around there. Yes, he was first.
I wanted to bring up a point that Ms. Marion mentioned earlier with regards to hypnosis and things like that.
Okay, start a little slower.
Yes.
Thank you.
With regard to hypnosis and forms of voluntarily moving into subconscious states, which is similar to but different from dreaming, which is just a natural cyclical process that we have to do every night, like going to bed and then sometimes we can't.
Except Theosophy would warn, don't ever be hypnotized, because you, at that moment, are frozen out of control of your own principles. It's the exact opposite of mesmerism. And it's like an infection that you then carry, making you susceptible to things. So at all times, you should be in charge of yourself. And there was another hand that...
To follow with that then...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm curious then about meditation, because certain cultures or spiritual practices, Buddhism being one and Taoism and such, do supplement both shortened sleeping times during the day with meditative states, or at nighttime with meditative states during the daytime, both being necessary for us to remove ourselves from our physical and our astral plane into a lower and higher mental
right.
state, and which gives us our nourishment, our spiritual nourishment that we need during the day. I wonder, as a thought piece, out of curiosity, what does that say about human beings, that we both need this cyclic process, that we're part of this cyclic process that removes us from our physical mortal reality to bring us into our spiritual world where we gain intellectual nourishment.
Okay. Again, it's a question sometimes of language. We are not in a physical reality. We're in a physical dream. This is an illusion that we think, oh, this is I. Well, it's not. And we step out of this I, this personal nature, every night. Meditation is to allow us to consciously step out when we're not sleeping. But it is something people think, oh, well, I can chant and that will do it. No, because it is the soul seeking the divine, not setting up any sort of demand on anything to bring something to you, but to be of it, to be your own spiritual nature. It requires concentration to get there, because we all know 1,001 interruptions. You don't even know you have a little toe until you sit down to meditate. And then your little toe becomes the biggest, noisiest thing in your universe. Mm-hmm. So it's a process of learning and growing, and it's our motive in why we're doing it, to taste and touch our own reality outside of the illusion. You had to.
We were reading in a book about the history of sleep that there was a time before artificial lighting, the people went to bed earlier, but then they woke up in the middle of the night and they were awake for an hour or two, and people would socialize and visit or knit or whatever, and then they would go back to sleep. They used to have a second sleep.
I've never heard of this.
Yeah. But we were wondering about Swedenborg, that he saw Stockholm burning. He was 100 miles away or something.
He wasn't asleep.
No, that's the question.
Oh.
is someone that's a clairvoyant or a mystic able to tap into that in a sense? Or we know it's not, he was conscious.
Yes, and he's touching universal mind. He's conscious, and he's able, and there are many souls who can do that.
He's able to do it while not asleep, whereas we may tap into it while we're asleep, we may bring it forward.
Or we may never bring it forward,
not,
right?
Or not.
Where the one who does it in physical consciousness brings it forward right at that moment. There's some, we know, we had an example. Heinrich Brusch, an Egyptologist, headed for the 1876 Philadelphia Centennial Exhibition. He was about to get on a train to meet the boat. He received a telegram from the Viceroy of Egypt: return to Cairo immediately. A bomb exploded on the boat he was about to take. The Viceroy had a dream and sent the telegram to prevent his death, which was the example given earlier. And this one, which has always given us the creeps. The bishop, Joseph Lanier, woke from a nightmare where he received a letter from Archduke Francis Ferdinand informing the bishop that Franz Ferdinand and his wife were victims of a political assassination. He went into such a panic, he woke up everybody and had masses said, and it was just a dream. Everybody thought he was behaving very strangely. A few hours later, of course, World War I started because the Archduke was assassinated. So we have time for one more.
Just similar to Lincoln, we
yes.
believe his wife had a dream.
No, that was Caesar's wife who had the dream.
Oh.
Lincoln himself had the dream. He dreamt of walking through the White House, and all was empty, but there was the sound of crying. In the East Room, he asked one of the mourning crowd, who died? The president. He has been assassinated. So he knew several days before. Caesar, his wife, said, do not go to the Senate. I had a horrible dream. And of course, it was ignored, and we know that. Artists, scientists, anyone has the ability to tap into, if they are devoted to getting answers, to concentrating themselves on what they can do with the good they already have, because we have amazing powers right now. What do we do with them? So it's not a question of intellect. It's a question of sincerity, of motive, and of determination. We have to be a little stubborn to get the answers we want because we built the wall that's in front of us, and we're the only ones who can take it down. So we have to watch how we use our powers during the day if we really want to know what we experience in the deep sleep state. How do we get those visions back? Meeting is adjourned.